oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacy Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Well, if you watched Dateline on Friday, you found out more about the Adelsons that maybe you knew, maybe you didn't know, but it didn't necessarily paint them in the brightest of lights. We're going to talk about what was revealed, what came out in that program, and what may be still to come in the case of Donna Adelson or Wendy or Harvey. Of course, here we got Todd Michaels, Stacy Cole. You guys all watched it. I'm just going to ask, you know, right off the bat, Stacy, when you watched it, I know you were carving a pumpkin the other day. You sent me a picture while you were doing it. It was a lovely Donna that you carved into the side of the pumpkin. I thought that turned out really good.
It was really good. It was.
Yeah. You got the hair really well. I was really impressed with it. Wouldn't that be great to carve pumpkins like do all the Adelsons?
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah.
There's still a few days. There's time. There's time.
There is time.
What was your reaction to the episode? Because it focused mainly on the Markells, and we're going to get into all of that here in just a moment.
I appreciated hearing that side. I mentioned to you guys before we went live here today that I really had forgotten some pieces of this case. It's been lingering for so long. So I think it was a really nice way to do a synopsis. And one of the things that I really forgot about was the stupidity of Donna Adelson and her inability to use technology. Mm-hmm. And what I'm referencing is when she kind of didn't hang up the phone and yes. was sitting there talking smack, and they're recording it when she was talking on a prison line, basically, to Charlie, right? Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, that was recorded, and yeah, you're right. There's two parts where she really reveals a lot of shit. There's the I didn't hang up the phone part, and then there's parts where she didn't realize. I mean, she should have. I don't know, but
it was recorded.
Yes, yes.
And she was just like, eh, whatever, you know. But yeah. To me, it's just, I'm going to offend some people here, but it's a boomer problem. It really is a boomer issue because it's like, how do you not know this by now? Mm-hmm. How do you not know that these calls are being recorded? You know, every call that you make these days is being recorded for quality assurance. It's being recorded for security purposes. Whatever, you're dealing with somebody in a prison. So there was a lot revealed that I had forgotten about. So it was a nice little refresher course for me.
I don't know that. I agree. I mean, the technology thing is going to be an age problem no matter what. But when it comes to someone like that, I don't know that age is necessarily a thing. Because I think if you're a narcissist and you just have that motor that is always going to be telling you, I need to justify this, I need to control the narrative. You can be 25 or you can be whatever she is, what, 70 something?
Yeah.
And I think you're still going to have that same motor, that one that's going to override all, you know, all sensibility, all common sense of just take a breath. Don't say this out loud. This could get really bad really quick. I mean, it's like when you're a little kid and you're just like, I got to say this. Like, you need to scratch that itch.
Yeah.
And with maturity and, you know, just mentally being older and understanding how things work and taking a breath and taking a beat and how just immediate reaction doesn't usually solve problems very well, especially on things like this. If that's there and you've never learned to have patience with it, you're going to do that no matter what.
I agree.
And I feel like it's just one of those things where the certain things are said to her, certain situations come to her, that itch is there. And no matter if there's 20 cameras pointing at her, she's still going to feel the, I got to scratch that itch no matter what. I'm going to do it. And that self satisfaction, that self-gratification, whatever it is, that's going to outweigh anything no matter what. It's almost, I don't know, I would almost say in some ways uncontrollable, I would think, in some of these people, where it's not necessarily a conscious decision that she's
so impulsive. I was going to say, so I bet they don't even know.
Yeah, I just, and then somehow her mind is telling her that, you know, well, this is going to be better no matter what, because it's worked out so many times for her in the past. Because there's a thousand little cuts that she was able to endure and slice onto all of her victims throughout life, and everything worked fine. So when it came to this big one, well, you've done this all these other times to all these other people, Donna. What's this other? This is going to be fine. It's not going to be a big deal. Yeah. I think that that's how her brain works. But I agree, it is a boomer problem. But I think that's just simply because of the technology. You know, I mean, do you feel it? I feel it today with some of the technology that's out there. I mean, I try to be as versed in it as I can be, and I'm still feeling like I'm always behind. I can't imagine, you know, I can't imagine how they feel right now on some of the stuff that's out there. I mean, we're talking, you know, before AI, when a lot of this stuff was going on, being behind now, it's just, you know, it's another galaxy, it feels.
I feel like every... I'm Gen X, so I feel like I need a Gen Z to kind of, or a millennial, to come and hold my hand and show me, like, hey, let's meet on Sundays at 3 o'clock and you show me the new shit from the week before.
Yeah.
You know, can we just do like a half hour little class? Like, tell me what, was it 6-7?
I don't even know what that means. I don't think, does anyone know it? I don't think there is a meaning to it.
I don't know that they know what it means.
I tried to ask my daughter about it. She's like, I don't think there is a meaning. I think people are just saying it and doing it. I'm like, well, why? They just are.
Well, and by the way, Daphne in our chat pretty much just called me an idiot. I'm not saying that all boomers are like that. I know a lot of great boomers. I'm not an idiot here, but I know a lot of boomers that really struggle with technology and just get themselves into trouble.
Statistically, you're going to have a higher amount that are. I mean, it's just, yeah, you're going to be less versed in it statistically. Not everybody.
No, not everybody. And there are some that are absolutely beautifully versed in it. But what happens is our world is moving in this technological vacuum. And if you're not keeping up, you are going to fall behind and get into trouble. Oh, I'm sorry, Daphne. She just said Donna was the idiot, not me. I'm sorry, kiddo. Well, that's okay. See, again, technology. You're reading into it incorrectly. But if you are getting behind in technology, look at everything that we do that is on your phone. If you still have, if you have a jitterbug phone, like a lot of us got for our grandparents, you can't do a lot of things. There are some places you can't go.
Are those still around?
If you go to a sporting event, they don't take cash anymore.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, well, so.
My mom still uses her checkbook. I just feel this is more secure. I'm like, you're literally giving your account number to anyone who wants it, and they're putting it in a drawer.
And a signature on that thing and all that kind of stuff.
And a signature. Like, you are giving everything away.
The one thing I have to say, and I'm not going to disagree with you, Stacey, but Donna did try to use a phone call that was recorded a little bit after that big debacle, where she did try to get her narrative out there. I don't know what they're talking about. So I don't know that it's necessarily like a boomer thing, because when she wants to use technology for her benefit, she certainly seemed to know how to do that.
It was
good for me to see this, because I had not seen the actual bump video before. So, and Stacey, you and I were talking about this before we went on, about how she actually handled that quite well. She didn't come across in the actual video where she was nervous or, oh my God, she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, that part of it, she actually did pretty well. But then she turned around and called Charlie right away and said, I think there's a problem for both of us, kind of thing, which right then and there put the nails in her coffin.
Yeah.
It was also good to see her. Before she went into prison, to see what kind of look she had and all that kind of stuff.
She was trying to look like Wendy.
Yes, absolutely, like Wendy's sister. But then the complaints about how she had gained weight in prison because the food is so bad and all that kind of stuff. It's like, get out of here with that crap.
Yeah, then don't commit a crime. Then you don't have to worry about prison food.
Exactly.
That's two thoughts.
Yes.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
But the fact that she was complaining about the food in prison is like, it's prison. Even Georgia Kaplman's like, this is prison. It's not supposed to be like Club Med, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's not a country club.
Right.
That I think, and we were talking about this the other day, at the end of the year here, we're going to put together kind of our greatest hits or our favorite moments of the year. And that, to me, watching that video, because there's a court hearing of Donna Adelson, a fairly inconsequential court hearing about her complaints of what jail is like. This is prior to her trial.
Yeah.
But it's funny to watch. And we'll go back and watch it again, because it's her complaining about everything on the stand to the judge for like 30 minutes.
Yes.
And it's just watching this narcissistic boomer flail and thinking that what she says should be taken into some sort of consideration, has some sort of relevance because of who she is or her age, or like just zero clue that you're not going to get special treatment here because of who you are. And she really genuinely, I think, believes that those were the mechanisms to find relief. And she's utterly shocked when they're not. Yeah. And there's a lot of things she does out loud that are pure theater, because she knows she's trying to manipulate. But when she really thinks that she's going to be, when she's pushed into that corner, that's where you have the collapse. That's where you have these hilarious moments of putting the narcissist in the cage, because they don't know what to do, because they can't do anything. And again, I mean, I've done the video and I'm like, why do we find her so fascinating? Why do we find it so satisfying to watch the narcissist in the cage? Again, it's because so many people know somebody like this, and not necessarily they've gone to this length, but have suffered through their bullshit throughout life. And it's just like, this represents all of that. It's interesting. I feel like that other doc that we're going to talk about later in this week, the Perfect Neighbor on Netflix. That's another Donna Adelson right there. That woman, the perfect neighbor lady, completely caught up in themselves, utterly clueless as to anybody else's emotions, feelings, well-being, not remotely even thinking that, gee, you know, there's all these kids out here, they're playing football in the streets, they're running around, they do have parental figures that are nearby watching, making sure that they're okay. You dumb bitch. Like, they'd be out there committing crimes. They could be doing horrible things. They are kids being kids in a rare neighborhood where they feel safe and the parents feel safe enough for them to be out there. But because it disturbs you and your little piece, you want to tear it all down. Never mind, there's all these other people out here that are benefiting, children included. But if it bothers you, then well, that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
In that court hearing, the other thing that I thought was really cool, you know, they were trying to get her like bond or bail or something like that, so she didn't have to stay in prison. And I thought Georgia did a nice job of saying, well, listen, she's a flight risk. She tried to go off to Vietnam or whatever. But then Donna's also telling the story about how somebody apparently, came up behind her and grabbed her arm and put it behind her back. And she said, you keep it up and you'll lose your pretty white teeth. And I'm looking at Donna's mouth going, okay, first of all, they're not white. Second of all, they're not pretty. And she was a dentist's wife.
So I got surprised by that.
I got a little petty at that point watching Dateline.
I mean, what does that say too? I mean, that's just a fascinating thing. I mean, she's married to a cosmetic dentist. Her son is a cosmetic dentist. These are the folks who can elevate your dental game beyond just cleanings and cavities. Like, they can give you the perfect smile. And you're not doing it.
You're not taking advantage of that.
Like, you think yours is already good enough. And so I don't know. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, it's a weird conundrum there on that. Like, why would you not take advantage of this? You know, especially when image is so important, but if you're so you already think your image is, you know, the fucking cat's meow. Yeah, then why would you change it? Because you're already there. I don't think I've ever used the cat's meow in a sentence.
Well, let's give you one of these. There you go.
Yes, the password is.
Yeah,
there we go. There was a letter that was shown on screen. I'm going to talk about this for a second, then we'll go to the letter. The other moment in that thing for me, and I love how Dateline, I mean, it's a lot of rehashed material, but the order in which it's placed, sometimes the producers do a very good job of putting things into perspective and making you see things in ways that, oh, I knew this, but when presented this way, this does make a little more sense. And the moment for me that really, really got me was the Charlie call, was after the bump, where was the whole, well, what is this about? Are you getting sued? Well, who is this about? Well, it could be about you and me. And she somehow thinks whispering on the phone is going to make it like less.
Yeah, that changes it, doesn't it?
It's changed. Exactly. It's very infantile in her way of thinking. But that right there was, you wouldn't say that if it wasn't about the two of you. And it's like, well, there we go. Like, if there's ever any doubt, because any all these cases, and I'm someone who always, I second guess myself on everything. So I'm always second guessing, like, my thoughts on a case, because I want to, not that I want to be right, but I want to make sure that I'm seeing it clearly and accurately. And whatever clear and accurate is where I want to be. So if I'm clouded by something, I want to understand that. I'm willing to change my opinion, but I need to hear that. And those little pieces like that are what make me go, yeah, okay, well, yeah.
Yep, and then right after that, too, you know, they showed a clip of Georgia talking with the jury, basically saying, you heard that. Like, this is damning evidence, basically, is what she said. So you're right. Yeah. The way they kind of piece that stuff together, you're like, oh, God, I mean, I knew that. I knew she said those things, but, God, that makes so much sense.
Exactly. When the ingredients are the right amount in the dish, it makes it right. When it's messed up, it's hard to tell it sometimes.
Exactly.
I got a letter here. This is this was obtained by Dateline, and we're going to read it. I have the full transcript of the letter. There was a little snippet of it that was read on Dateline. This is the full thing. And this was a letter written in 2024 to Harvey from Donna. And it's about her grandkids and them going to school for the first time. And a couple of things I want you to think about when we read this and you listen to it. Is she writing it to Harvey? Is she truly writing this to Harvey as if he didn't know these things? No. Is this her just verbally throwing up, you know, into a letter of here's all my emotions? Or was this intended for someone else to read to as a piece of theater?
That's where my head went. This is all performance. This is performative. Mm-hmm. This is her making her statement in the only way that she can at this point.
Mm-hmm. And maybe somebody inside the courtroom or whoever the investigators are will see this and realize what it's doing to her. Again, when she wants to, she can use various forms of technology to try and play the game.
Yeah.
Yep.
So this is it. It starts out with a title. It doesn't start like, Harvey, my love, you wonderful dentite of the world. first day of school, ... This will be the first time I don't get to see the boys and take pictures on their first day of school. Never mind, Dad's dead. And grandparents aren't, you're not allowing them to see their grandchildren whose son you just offed. It breaks my heart that I can't see them or even pictures of them on this special day. Please tell them that I'll be thinking about them and wishing them both a good start to their school year. They had a fun summer with activities, camp, and friends, and now it's time to get to work. Please tell them if I get a fair trial, I'll get out of jail and come to see them in Austin. If not, I want them to do the best they can because that will make me happy. Because I'm sure they're just like, what can we do to make Donna happy?
Yeah, how can we help her?
How telling is that, though, that the first thing she's saying is, it'll make me happy.
It'll make me happy. Because this is, because she thinks everyone's there to serve her.
Yes.
That there's no, like, the world is simply Donna's oyster to conquer, and everyone else works for her.
Yep.
When you guys were kids, did you ever like, I mean, I remember like, you know, you're trying to figure out the world and you're running things through your mind. You're like, I'm like, what if I am the only one? Like, what if all this is just like, you know, just you yes. run weird thoughts through your head.
Sure.
And then you go, well, that's fucking insane. Like, of course it's not. There's other people here. They have feelings. And like, I think some people lock into that thought and go, well, that's how this works. And then that's modality for the rest of their lives.
I think you're right. I think you're right.
If this state convicts me like they did to their uncle. Their uncle. Like,
wait,
wouldn't you say my son?
Yeah.
Right, right.
For a crime had no pardon. I want them to remember all the fun things we did together. I do not want them to visit me in prison. I just want them to remember the good times. If I don't get out, then hopefully I die soon so that no one remembers me in prison garb behind bars. Donna, that's the only way people are going to remember you, actually. That's the only legacy you have.
Can I just say something here? I guess you could call my dad a histrionic person. Mm-hmm. My mom and dad had a very contentious custody battle. We were in mm-hmm. court all the time. I actually had to get up on the stand and testify against my dad that he was a horrible parent so that mm-hmm. I didn't have to go spend summers with him. Long sordid story. But
yeah.
he would call up on a Sunday after, was it before five? I think it was before five. This is a long time ago. Long distance became more expensive after a certain time frame when people had landlines. Because, yes, yeah. I'm a little older. And he would say, oh, I'm not feeling well. I've been having chest pains. I may die. And it was just this horrible guilt trip of I'm going to die soon. And finally, one time I said, well, you didn't die last week, so I think your odds are pretty good for this week.
Yeah.
I mean, knock it off. We're it's all going what, to die.
It's what they do.
Exactly.
It is what they fucking do.
Yes.
And it's like it's a scripted play. When this doesn't work, when that doesn't work, when all yep. the levers that they used to pull that were able to manipulate people, simply the slot machine's not plugged in anymore and it's not going. What do? You're ill.
Yes.
You're sick. And they all fucking do it.
When my dad finally died, Tony,
yeah.
when my brother called and said that my dad had died, I said, are you sure?
Yeah.
Because the guy had been dying my entire fucking life.
Exactly. I've seen it. I've seen it in my own personal life. I'll share a little fun stuff here. So the narcissist in your life, mm-hmm. the narcissist that was in my life for many years, narcissist borderline, all that. Two fake cancer scares.
Oh yeah, we had one of those. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then also tell the children that too.
Oh my.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, well, think of what it does to a kid.
Holy
shit. To have them traumatized that their parent's going to die.
Yeah. And then you wonder why your child wants.
You don't do that to a kid.
No. And then you wonder why no child wants anything to do with you. It's right. like, well, you already traumatized one this way. And then you add this in of like yep. when all the levers weren't working, it was I'm dying of cancer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And oh, my God. And as a healthy person.
Yeah.
When you hear that from someone, you have empathy.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And that's
you're
what
you're supposed to.
That's what they're betting on, you know? And eventually, yep. I mean, it's like the boy who cried wolf, but like in a real, real visceral, sick level. And you go, I can't believe someone would do this.
Right.
And I don't know sometimes if they actually believe the shit they're saying. Maybe they do. But sometimes it's just when all else fails, I'm going to be deathly ill. And you can see it when folks like this begin to collapse.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to say any names. I'm not going to say there's one I'm watching in real time. I think some of us are watching in real time narcissistically collapse right now. I can guarantee illness will be next. I can fucking
always
guarantee it.
Always.
I can guarantee there's going to be a feigning of an illness soon.
Do you want to do a bet right here on the podcast? Because we can all throw up some money to see what happens here. I've got $5 in my wallet. What about you, Stacey?
I think I've got a $2 bill hanging around somewhere that I've been saving for years.
I mean, I'll take the two out of that.
Are we going to put a timeline on the date that the illness appears?
I think it's going to be before the end of the year.
I do too. It's going to be at an inopportune time for everyone else. It will probably be a holiday.
I was just going to say
Thanksgiving or Christmas, because they also do that. Narcissists will pick the holiday or whatever moment is important to someone else.
Yep.
So it will either be on a holiday or someone's birthday or some momentous occasion in their life, some sort of achievement that's going on. That's when it's already in queue. You know, in the back of their mind, they're like, it's cocked, it's ready to go. And there will be a feigned illness in that scenario. But there is in everybody's scenario when these sort of things happen. Again, I'm not going to say more about that as far as who, but I think a lot of us know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, Stace, we do.
Stacey's in for $2 at Christmas. I got that written
down.
Christmas?
Christmas Eve.
I'm going to go.
I don't know that it's going to, I think it's going to be desperate and it's going to be needed sooner, seeing that, because the implosion we're watching is insane. I'm going to go Thanksgiving. I'm going to go Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And I think the feigned illness.
Okay. I'm going to go with Festivus. Festivus for mine, for my
friends. What is Festivus, by the way?
Technically what? There's a date for it.
Yeah, let me look that up. Because I do celebrate it every year. I didn't, when I moved out of my house, I didn't bring my Festivus pole, but I had a pole out in the garage. Not
that.
Like that kind of pole.
Yeah,
not
whatever.
That kind of pole.
Yeah, she's spinning around.
What's
the
this?
Pole.
Oh, it's a Festivus pole. Bullshit. Nobody attaches a Festivus pole to the ceiling.
Why is
it wasn't
like
attached.
Strobe
it was
lights?
Just a pole on a stand.
Why is there baby oil all over it?
That would be you've got to slide down the pole then.
Stop.
That would be, yeah. But I'm going to go Thanksgiving. I'm going to go Thanksgiving on that one. That's my guess. I don't know.
Right, Festivus 2025 is December 23rd. It's a Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on that, we're live that week? Are we not live that week? I don't think so.
On what?
The 23rd
Christmas?
Of December.
No, I think we're going to be not.
All right,
live
so
that
we'll
week.
Have to do our Festivus celebration early,
sure.
Where we do the airing of the grievances.
That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there'll be definitely a serious feigned illness, and no one will know the difference because you can't like go get medical records and be like, hey, this is what's happening. And it's going to either you're going to be on board with it or you're not. And I don't know what I'm watching there. There's a lot of people jumping ship. So yeah, that'll happen. And Donna, we're going to see Donna. We're going to see Donna feign some illness here too.
Yeah.
So it's just part of, it's like they, when I started learning about borderlines, narcissists, history, all that shit, the dark triad of insane.
Yeah.
It's like the joke is they all went to the same convention because they all like go off the same fucking playbook and
they
all think they're so unique in it. And they all think nobody's going to see this. Nobody's going to like see through my bullshit. If I say it aloud, people are going to be like, well, that's true.
Yeah. And they all have the same swag bag.
And the thing is a lot of people do. And that's the scary part of it. But Donna, I'm sure, is going to go, you know, that'll be on her thing as well. Let's continue with the letter here. It says, that's not what I want, of her being behind bars. Doesn't want the kids to remember her that way. Please remember this. I'm holding on the best I can. Every day is a challenge. I believe that I should come home, but I'm realistic too. We all saw the 2-hour deliberation and the decision to put my son behind bars for life. This is still Tallahassee. Kappelman is still the hometown Southern sweetheart prosecutor who's gotten convictions on everyone in this case. She just wants another notch in her belt. She doesn't care about the truth. This is vigilante justice. Just building and telling herself, like, thank you for letting Harvey know this, I guess. And these jurors have to go back to their friends, neighbors, and coworkers and explain why they wouldn't convict another Adelson. It's easier to just convict and be done. Thank you for being strong and hanging in there with me. I love you more than you can imagine. Thank you for being you. I love you so much. Donna Sue.
That was the part right there that made me want to puke.
Yeah.
Donna Sue. Ugh. Oh. I think when I do my Donna accent, I usually always put a little English accent in it, too. So it's always, oh, yes. Oh, poor me.
You got to have the vibrato.
Queen? Yeah.
No. There's a lot of that going on.
I love you so much, Harvey. You stand by. It's kind of like Katharine Hepburn. But
You do a really good one, too.
It is. It really is. The Markells, and I'll read their statement because they put it out, and I think we did read this the other day, but for context, this is what the Markells have said about the whole situation. During sentencing, our family listened in disbelief to the disrespectful and delusional statements made by both Donna and Harvey Adelson before Donna's sentencing for first-degree murder and other convictions of our son and brother, Dan Markell. Contrary to Donna's claim, she never mourned the loss of Danny's life, nor did she ever express concern for his sons losing their father. Yep. Testimony at her trial showed her callous indifference to his murder, including written evidence that she dismissed the very idea that the boy could be sad or miss their dad. It is deeply unfortunate that Harvey used this time before the court to challenge our family's account of our relationship with Ben and Lincoln. We will set the record straight, as we have in court and elsewhere. Our family was cut off from contact with the boys for 6 full years, from the moment authorities implicated Adelson family members in Danny's murder until 1 hour after the Florida legislature passed the Markell Act. Since then, our interactions have been limited, mainly through Wendy's supervised Zoom calls and short visits. Wendy refuses to share their address, and gifts that we send must be mailed to her lawyer's office. We were uninvited to Benjamin's bar mitzvah following Charlie's arrest, and were never invited to Lincoln's. We grieve the years lost and the years ahead without independent and direct contact with them. Beyond her crimes, Donna scorned Danny, drove deliberate wedges between him and Wendy, and disparaged him to his own sons. Her display of emotion before the court was not remorse for Danny's death, but sorrow for consequences she now faces for causing it. We thank the court, prosecutors, jurors, and law enforcement for their steadfast commitment to bringing justice to Donna Adelson for her role in this terrible crime. That's the letter. And there was something that Dan's father said on Dateline on Friday, and I'm just going to read it. It was at the very end of the episode. He said, you know, wouldn't it be, he said this to Wendy, wouldn't it be nice if we could arrange for the boys, you included, to let them see where their father grew up,
right,
let them see where he's buried? She said that will never happen.
That broke my heart.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody who, you know, I watch the world news at 5:30 or whatever. And the last story is always one of those that are supposed to like grab you by the heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And I always weep at those. So I'm a little wuss when it comes to that stuff. But when Mr. Markell said that, I just couldn't believe it. You could hear the pain in his voice.
Yeah.
We want to be part of their life. We want them to see how much love we have for them. That's how that ended. And yeah, I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, God damn. And it may not, you know, God knows what these kids think of their grandparents after what the Adelsons have fed them over the years. I mean, it's probably not as easy as flipping a switch. They're in their mid-teens. If they have their mindset made of who they are, and as everyone is at one point in time, young and dumb, they are products of what they've been brought up around. And unfortunately, it's been mainly the Adelsons. So it's probably going to take several years for them to, if they ever do, break out of that shell and see the world around them for what it is. The sad part is, by the time they get there, their grandparents may not be around anymore.
Well, and here's the sad and yet beautiful part about this is once they become independent and they can make their own decisions, I would put money on the fact that they are probably going to reach out to those grandparents and say, I'm sorry that we missed out on so much with you. Let's make up for lost time. Once they don't have somebody pulling the puppet strings.
I'm hoping that's the case. The thing is that will happen much quicker if Donna is actually taken into the courtroom herself. And a lot of people are asking in our chat, do we think that's going to happen?
Yes.
I don't know.
I mean, you Wendy is going to continue. Like people like this don't change. And this is all complete conjecture. Wendy's obviously never been charged with anything. She maintains her innocence. But just generally speaking here, my experience, I think from anyone's experience, narcissists don't change. And if this is your modality, this is how you operate, and you're literally telling, you know, the grandparents that will never happen. And she could even like give a little bullshit, like, well, maybe someday, maybe this summer or something. It's like, that will never happen. Wow. That's a really cold, calculated, like, Isn't it? Just flat out saying it. Okay. That's never going to change. She's going to, in my opinion, I'm going to guess this is going to be her modality until the day she dies too, which will probably be a very long time from now. And these kids, this is the only family they know. This is the only family they have. And that's why these cycles are able to go on for as long as they do, because people don't want to be uncomfortable. Right. They're not going to break out of the cycle if everything in the cycle over here is home, no matter how fucked up that home is. Some do break away, but they're typically looked at as the odd duck. It's not like the majority move away and there's the one that sticks around. It's usually one that breaks and then everybody else stays and continues to feed the demon. And so who knows? I mean, I really hope that they do at some point have that reckoning. You know, we went on this show when we've had like Siobhan and stuff on, there's been many times where we've gotten done talking about, you know, their lives, you know, from, you know, the 1,000-foot perspective of not living them. And, you know, if you could say something to those kids the day that they're someday scrolling and looking for their history, what would you say to them? You know, because I think they're going to find, they will be able to find perspective on their lives through outside sources in ways no one else has in the past. Mm-hmm. So I think that is going to be helpful to them in ways that, you know, other people may not have had. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if that is something that helps.
I'll just say this. I'm ready for Wendy in court. I think that it'll be good watching. I think that I'd love to see Georgia go after it and see what happens. And see if there's a jury that makes a decision in 3 hours, like her brother and her mama. So,
yeah, it'll be fascinating. They are victims of circumstance right now, and hopefully, hopefully the future is brighter for them. Hopefully their uncle maybe can step in and give them a little reality check. Cause I doubt it's going to be coming from Wendy, in my opinion, but
no,
it's a messed up story, all around. But that's the latest, on the Adelsons.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.